Rec Radio, episode 49, almost pulling up to a year. As you guys know, this show is sponsored by Rollbit, so check out rollbit.com for your DN needs. We'll have two to give away, as usual. The first code is VENTURE1362, and then make
Venture.
Sure... VENTURE, exactly.
I didn't know what you were saying, to be honest. So go ahead. Sorry.
VENTURE1362.
Get the American accent go over me. I thought you were saying Spencer, like a different way to say sensor.
So no.
I don't know. Continue. I don't want to interrupt. I'm like making this awkward.
No, that's all good. As you guys know, we stream the show every week on X. So make sure you for Rec Radio _ on Twitter for all the latest updates. We have a video stream of this on Twitter as well, but also check out YouTube for recorded shows. Check out Spotify for recorded audio shows. And following us on Instagram and TikTok. And leave
TikTok.
Us.
What the fuck? I didn't know about we had a TikTok.
Yeah, apparently TikTok. I didn't know either. Intern is all over it.
Man, I think that's the boomer in me.
It is. And leave us a 5-star review on TripAdvisor as well.
Yeah, definitely do that. Wow. So there's a new feature for this, what it called Spaces Live on the video side, where there's a chat. So now I have that up. So we can like chat live with the audience now, a little bit like Twitch streams. You guys should pull it up too. Spencer knows stuff if you're at a screen with multiple monitors or have a lot of space, throw up the chat and we can get some audience questions. I think we compiled some already from the tweets we put up, but that'll be a little more fun for a little more interacting. Hopefully it doesn't take up too much of my brain space here. There's only so much left. I feel like I'm losing it all. Don't know how to trade. Don't know how to do anything anymore. But we're out here. So with that being said, things have been looking pretty good lately, right, guys? What do you think?
Feels good. I don't know. Why don't you kick it off, Spencer? How do you feel about the market right now?
I mean, like, I'm cautiously optimistic, right? Like, things feel really good. And the thing that I think is a bigger deal is what happens when things feel good than whether this is, like, the final good, right? So I think, like, you have mixed opinions here. Some people are like, this is the beginning of a bull market. Other people is like, this is a big bull trap, right? I don't know, maybe one way or the other. Like, I think it's really hard to suss out these sort of big macro questions. But what is really compelling is like, okay, when people think there is a bull run happening, what assets move and in what way? And this is like interesting to see, right? Things have definitely become more interesting recently. You know, we look at like one of like the sub theses I've always had is like when there's an all asset bull run in crypto, like ETH will rip, Bitcoin will rip, and then punks can rip in ETH. And that's kind of what's happened over the last like unit of time. And that I think is a really positive indicator to like, because it could have been true, right? Like ETH rips, everyone's like, oh, my JPEG bags, like screw that. Like I'm dumping everything, right? And we didn't really see that yet. And so this is like optimistic, right? Because the bull case for like JPEG bags and like NFTs has always been that like there was this period of time in the last like crypto bull cycle where crypto ripped in US dollars and then NFTs ripped in crypto. And you just had this like compounding like crazy run, right? Mm-hmm. And so the idea is like, can that happen again? And I think what we've seen in the last couple of weeks where there is like a subset of people that are pricing in the potential for like an actual bull run, like whether or not this is the bull run, I'm still very optimistic from what I've seen play out in the last like couple of weeks, because it's at least like a trial or like a you know, we're seeing a little bit more of what will happen in a real bull run.
Yeah, no, I'd have to agree with you. I mean, it's pretty hard not to say that this is not a bull run. I mean, like the market's up massively from lows. Stock market, for instance, is about to break all-time highs. Like things have been pretty bullish. I think a lot of people are just stuck in bearish tropes. I mean, I didn't get in them myself, so you have some PTSD and feel like, you know, this is still a bear market. It's definitely not the case. Everything's been bullish for a while. But yeah, I mean, it does seem like it is kind of the everything bull run right now. Maybe it's NFTs are doing well, ETH's doing well, everything's kind of going up. I mean, NFTs, for instance, they're just beaten down so much, it's hard for them to really go down as ETH goes up, I feel like, at this stage of the market. Maybe you'll see that in the future as ETH like rises in value. Then it kind of, you know, it's hard to see that correlation keeping up. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think like, you know, we talk about things feeling bullish, but like the price of ETH, for example, is like, we've hit this high in the last couple of months. Like it's not crazy. $2,200 ETH, $2,100 ETH is not like unheard of in the bear market. It's just like the thing is, right, this is all sort of an interest rate play in the sense of, like, you got to look and say, okay, what has changed? The thing that, like, fundamentally changed that makes this, at least to me, feel like a bull run, and to a lot of people feel like a bull run, is like, okay, we at least have a line of sight to where, like, interest rates can plateau. But what we don't yet have the, like, good sense of, and this is where I think there's the most varied opinions, is, okay, they probably stopped increasing, but, like, when decrease, right? And that's, like, the really big catalyst. And that's where I think, like, you could see things really, really ascend. You know, we also obviously, like, so much of this last move has been based on spot BTC ETF approval, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there's, like, two variables at play here. So the first is, like, do you think the ETF will be approved, right? I think consensus is just, like, yes on that right now. Now, of course, if it doesn't get approved, this is such a counter-consensus thing that, like, the red candle would be epic.
Yeah, it'd be massive.
Yeah, it'd be nuts, right? Yeah, but, like,
great, right?
So I have, like, some amount of cash just, like, with limit orders set at where I think ETH goes, and it's, like, 50%.
Oh, man, that'd be a mega awesome, really. That's a get-rich trade.
The wash out there would be nuts, yeah, right? But, like, so nice. And this is funny because, like, my fingers are crossed that it doesn't get approved, because then I can just have this crazy trade. But,
yeah,
like, I think in general for crypto, it's better that it gets approved, right? So, but then you have the second question. I think I don't hear enough people talking about the second question, which is, like, what actually happens after it gets approved? Like, how much is the inflow of capital priced in, and is there real inflow, right? And so I think you've got to think about this, right? The big institutions, if you look, want BTC exposure, there is, like, a myriad of ways you could get BTC exposure. Let's say you're deploying, like, 100 mil, right? You don't need to wait for spot ETF approval. What, like, spot ETF approval really changes is, I think, actually, like, the potential for a lot of inflows from, like, retail, right? Retirement accounts. I know a lot of people who are waiting on this ETF to put part of their Roth IRA into just, like, Bitcoin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the question is, how big is that inflow of capital, and to what degree is it priced in? Like, there's a world here where, yeah, we got this approval, we launched the spot Bitcoin ETF, and the inflows of capital to crypto just, like, aren't that meaningful, right? Like, this is something that's so incredibly known to be happening that everyone's just been buying up Bitcoin, buying up, like, you know, kind of crypto assets. Like, it's not obvious to me that, like, post Bitcoin ETF approval, obviously probably will have a pump on the news, but, like, maybe like all of these inflows are already accounted for, or maybe they're over accounted for, right? Like, we just don't have a good sense of the order of magnitude of how much capital this actually brings into the market.
I think that's an interesting point, because, you know, when you look at the ETH futures ETF, for example, like, that was, the volumes there were tiny, and people were just like, oh, wow, this is, like, a massive letdown. And even, like, I remember when you had, like, the Bitcoin futures that came to the market, like, in 2018 or whatever, like, it did a ton of volume. People were just like, oh, this is it, and it's kind of shit. But I guess what people are hoping for this time around is it's less about, like, the volumes that the product does, and it's more about, like, traditional financial institutions getting in and trying to create demand for crypto. But you're right, like, we have no concept of if they'll be successful. I mean, they, in a year's time, they might just be like, oh, that was shit, we're gonna hang up the boots and not push this. But I don't know, I would like to think that if the timing of it is good and the Bitcoin ETF does really well, then all these guys will make so much money that they'll just keep doing it more and more and more and create new demand for crypto. But I guess that's the hope, and we don't really know how to quantify it or judge it until it happens, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of lean that it's a non-event. I don't know why creating an ETF is suddenly gonna change the flows massively from what they were in the past. Like, people try to comp it to a gold ETF. It's like, gold is like a fucking hard bar of metal that was a little harder to buy than Bitcoin in its current form. So I think the ETF for, like, physical metals and commodities obviously changed the game there and helped the pricing mechanism create markets in those senses. But it's like, do we really think that an ETF is going to massively change flows just because people have access to it on, you know, a spot ETF on the stock market or something like that, just because, you know, VanEck or Vanguard or BlackRock is backing it? I don't know. Does that just give it more credibility, I guess? Does that mean an institution can put it on its balance sheet in some capacity, or, like, you know, your financial advisor can finally recommend it? I guess that is true in those senses. So maybe there will be flows there, but I'm kind of, like, sort of thinking it's not an event and that a lot of this has just been front running. But I do think the market should be going up anyway, with just the way, like, interest rates and everything, like you've been saying. So it's an interesting dilemma here. I don't know. It could be a sell the news event down the line too. So,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the other things that, like, I don't hear talked about enough is, like the importance of, like, political, like, kind of regime change in the US potentially, like, in the next year, right? Like, I think a lot of people are underpricing the degree to which like crypto becomes a pretty big issue politically in the US, because you have like, on the one hand, Democratic Party, which took a lot of donors, you know, from SBF, from FTX. Like, this is a huge sort of political like image issue, and they've kind of gone really anti-crypto. And this has actually like pushed kind of the Republican Party in the US like much more pro-crypto, I think. And, you know, like, look, there's a non-zero chance that we have a president in office next year that has his like own shitcoin NFT, right? Like this is like a real thing that is happening.
That's true.
And it's not even a non-zero chance. I would say this is like a pretty likely chance that we have a president with like his own like NFT shitcoin. Like, this is to me a bigger event, a much bigger event than ETF approval.
What do you think I'm curious.
A spike live on air.
Ooh.
This just shows bullish now.
A spike higher,
spiked
right?
up like 700 points in Bitcoin. 37,200. Anyway.
What, a real spike.
What happened to that?
This is a real one. I don't know if there was news or not. I don't have my news stuff up, but just saw that the chart just spike up. And I don't know. I mean, it seems like markets look bullish. But anyway, what were we saying?
I was going to ask you guys, actually, what are the, as someone who's not American, like, what are the election trades into next year? Like, are there any like early thoughts on like, this would be bullish for this, or this would be like bearish for this, or whatever, in terms of like US election next year? Because I think that's going to be the thing that will dominate the timeline, both and crypto as well. I know there'll be like meme coins and shit coins and stuff, and be like, you know, like buy this one if it's like for Trump, or like buy Trump NFTs or whatever. But like, from more of like a...
Yeah, wait, are Trump NFTs a massive play? I saw some rumbling.
They probably are, should be honest with you.
Well, supply is large.
I go really back and forth in this, because A, supply is large. B, I think there's this forcing function where if they become valuable enough, he'll just mint more to make more money.
Yeah, of course.
Right? Like this is very much the MO. And so like, it's this sort of uncapped supply, but like, it's also like, part of me, it feels like, okay, am I just like completely like, trying to like accidentally right curving the like the super left curve play of like the potential presidential shitcoin? Because like this, these NFTs are like, I think, well done shitcoins, right? Like it really leans into the like unseriousness of this. And so like, but again, you know, everyone thought this was the play. They did series two. You know, their series three is already in the works, right? Like, it just, you just feel it, right? And so,
right? There's a lot of series on deck. You can do up to like whatever president he is. I don't know what president he is.
45.
Yeah, there you go. Series all the way up to 45, like current day Trump.
And then you just run it back, do some reprints.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll be like Yu-Gi-Oh cards.
Right? Uncapped is definitely the term I'd use here with Trump at the helm. So, Spencer, let's get a little bit in your background. I think we kind of skipped over that. And just like who you are, what you do in the space and all that stuff like that. How you find crypto, everything.
Yeah.
Give me everything.
So I'll just give you a little bit of background. I've got like a weird path in life. I like didn't go to college from high school. I used to be a competitive fencer, do like World Cups and Grand Prix for the US fencing. Started working in a tech startup while I was doing that, because it was kind of flexible. Won a few $1 million in contract, got promoted to C-suite. The joke at that company always was we were doing ed tech, but I was uneducated. So I like left that company, went to University of Chicago, got an economics degree, was an executive at three more startups, venture backed two of them, sold one of them. One of them we raised like 125 mil val in like a year and a half. At the beginning of each of those companies, I used to like buy and sell Magic the Gathering trading cards. And that was how I like funded early employees, was just like, you know, hustling some trading card buys and sells. And that was like just bootstrapping the ramen noodles or whatever. And then like pandemic happened, kind of like took some time off, started doing venture investing, joined up with a business partner of mine, we ran a group called Lofty Ventures doing like seed and pre-seed stage venture investing. And then like early 21 kind of stumbled into NFTs on like Clubhouse and was like, oh, this is just like venture investing with trading cards. Like, this makes lots of sense. I was like kind of right place, right time, kind of knew what to look for, kind of bought my first Bored Ape for like $5,000. Was an early investor in like artifact assets, had a crazy bull run last cycle and sold almost everything to Stables in December of 21. And then was approached by a very large family office looking for some crypto exposure, specifically like in the NFT space. It was like, you know, we're looking for a good product. It's kind of hard to get institutional exposure. Like, I knew them through venture investing. They're like, can you maybe structure something for us? And I came back to them. I was like, yeah, but like, let's do this like a little bit later. Your long-term capital, things are kind of hot. So I came back to them in Q3 of 2022. That was when we raised the first fund. We were like mostly cash when FTX happened. I think we're one of the top contributors of volume to Blur ahead of their first airdrop. We bought like a ton of Pudgy Penguins from cash during the FTX collapse. So did really well on that. And we've just kind of been deploying ever since. And so, you know, kind of I sit on the side of like being a fund manager, but we're like, I think one of the only NFT funds that like actively manages and trades positions. We provide a lot of liquidity on NFTFi infrastructure. So, you know, be that lending, be that whatever it is, we'll do all sorts of weird stuff. And like my role in the space is kind of just helping bridge institutional capital into like good exposure for NFTs and like degenning on behalf of institutions.
Wow. So I don't want to be presumptuous, but it sounds like you might be maybe the only NFT fund in history that's profitable. Or have done things that weren't completely ridiculous. Sounds like you took like an actual calculated approach. You weren't just buying like what the fuck was it? Bitcoin punks. Like who is that guy? I
don't even remember. Oh, Ryan Carson.
Yeah, with those funds. Wow, so that's impressive. You sounds like you hit some home runs. You had some things early. Sounds like you guys have been doing well in that arena. Is that true, or have you been riding some big positions that have went poorly as well?
I mean, like, look, right? Like we obviously have some positions that didn't do as well, but some of our big wins are big enough that it's like, even if I make a bunch of stupid plays, it's like pretty hard to be net down, right? And so, you know, this is one of the cool things about like managing a liquid fund, right? Versus thinking about this as venture. I think this is like a big difference is most of the NFT funds like in the space, just think of this as venture. You just buy and hold for 10 years and like hope it goes up over time. But like for us, okay, if we have a position up 3, 4, 5x, like we'll just trim back, you know, 10, 20, 30% of it, recoup our cost basis, pay some distribution back to our investors. And then like we have moon bags that we can just let ride, right? Because it's great. But like, this is one of the things too is, you know, one of the beautiful things about NFTs for me is like, okay, on the one hand, you have just like spot exposure to NFTs. But on the other hand, actually a lot of the big wins in the NFT space have not really just come from the spot exposure for NFTs, but like what you can do with them and what can you farm with them, right? Yeah. So one of our biggest wins was the Blur airdrop, the first one that had like a $0 cost basis and returned, you know, close to a quarter of the fund off of just that, right? And so this is like this crazy cool opportunity. You know, there's some other stuff too. You know, if you look back, some of the other big wins in the space have been LooksRare was a huge win, like just trading early in LooksRare and getting those tokens, right? There's a lot. Flooring Labs recently has been kind of another iteration of that. Lending, borrowing, all these other sorts of things. I think one of the interesting parts of the space right now is a lot of the bigger institutional crypto players have trouble thinking about NFTs because like they can't think about the spot exposure. So like, for example, one of the challenges I know a lot of market makers face when they enter the NFT space is because you can't really like, there's not I think we'll get there, but today there isn't like that many like ways to short or hedge your exposure. Mm-hmm. So like if you're trying to market make NFTs, for example, and this is the classic thing. A lot of these like traditional, like, you know, financey TradFi guys come into NFTs and like, we're in a market make, because market making in like traditional finance is like the greatest thing ever, right? Mm-hmm. You're not directionally exposed. You just print money on volume. That's what everyone loves, right? You don't have to like be a gigabrain. It's just math. The problem is, in NFTs, let's say you're market making, you have a big bid on a collection and someone dumps 100 units of spot, like say you guys did.
Yeah, sounds like, familiar.
Machi, somebody did with Bored Apes on Machi's head. I don't know who, but like, let's say you dump 100 units. Traditionally, a market maker, when they had 100 units of spot dumped on them, would just short, right, to be dealt a hedge and they re-enter that over time. Mm-hmm. Can't do that in NFTs. So like market making doesn't really work. And this causes a lot of these like bigger players to get flushed out. But also like, other strategies, right? Like we provide liquidity on, you know, covered options protocol. And to do that, you have to LP NFTs and ETH. Well, most market makers are like, we have no idea how to like assess the inventory risk of holding the NFTs that you're going to put into that LP pool, right? You see this also on like something like Flooring Labs, where like you can LP, there's like incentivized LP pools between fractionalized NFTs and ETH. But that means you need to hold spot exposure for fractionalized NFTs. And so like, so many of these funds for whom NFT is not a core competency have no idea how to think about that risk and can't hedge it out, right? And so we've just been able to collect a lot of like weird small arbs off of like, okay, if the premise is we're actually very comfortable with spot NFT exposure and like we're actually pretty good at thinking about which collections or which things we are comfortable in, there's a lot of cool and like very high EV farming plays and stuff you can do in the NFT financialization ecosystem that like have these crazy excised returns like the Blur airdrop.
What do you think for, I think the Blur, the next season 2 airdrop is in a few days, 5 days, I think.
Ooh, yeah.
Do you have any expectations for that? I know like a bunch of people who are heavy into Blur farming may end up lower, but at the end of the day, people are still going to get a token, and Blur is what, up like 100% off the lows or something. It's been doing pretty well recently.
300%, so. Right? I mean, 200%, it's crazy, yeah. Right? Like, here's the thing, right? Is like there's two things going on here. The first is there is more than, so like these big institutions, right? And I'm talking like hundreds of millions to billions of dollar AUM funds. Like NFT space in general is like too small for them to really play in, right? But one of the, I think, the most obvious things is that like a bet on volumes returning to NFTs is a 10x potential return play. Like that's a play with venture style returns into the next market, right? This is, and this is actually an important concept, right? I think people don't talk enough about this. We're like, for example, L2s, ZK Sync, rollups. This is like an obvious narrative. The problem is all the good L2, ZK Sync, whatevers have these like several billion dollar market caps because it's so obvious. And so like, how high does that need to go to 10x like, to have a venture style return into the next market? Like, it's really tough to see something like Arbitrum having a venture style return, right? But like, if you could just bet on like NFT volumes going up into the next cycle, like this is easily a potential 10x, right? Because it's not even hitting all-time highs if it 10x is off of the current volumes, right? And so, okay, now you have this thesis, but like actually finding the right way to get exposure to a 10x in volume of NFTs is pretty tough. And so I think there's like a couple, like the easiest answer in the market is like Blur token. And for this reason, there's actually like a lot of these bigger funds that just like want to position in Blur token because they see it at, and you know, you can debate whether it is or isn't, but like, I think it is seen by a lot of people as the closest thing to a proxy for a bet on NFT volume, right? That's the buy side. Now the sell side looks real grim, right? This is the big challenge. It's like all of these farmers who are market making in an industry where you can't short, just lost like thousands of ETH, right? And you can see this pretty easily in their portfolios. Like they basically market made an asset that was down only for like 9 months. And turns out, even if you're like you just like cannot run a delta neutral strategy market making NFTs, right? And so they just took tons of directional risk and got absolutely blown out. Now, what does this mean? It means that it's very likely that a lot of these people like need to sell their positions to recoup just their losses from the trading and farming of this asset, right? And even if that's not necessarily true, the perception of that being true is so strong within those communities that like I think we see a huge amount of sell pressure. And it's a lot of money. It's something like $50 to $100 million of tokens at current prices are getting unlocked on the 20th, right? And
yeah,
you got to think, right? Like, is there, what percent of that is getting dumped? I'd say probably 50 to 80% of that's getting dumped, right? And then like, okay, is that other narrative of the bigger institutions waiting to buy it strong enough to counterbalance? Is there $50 to $100 million of buy pressure against that selling pressure? And this is where like, I just don't know, right? We'll have to see it play out. I'm a little bit skeptical, right? I think the bigger thing to think about following that is what happens to NFT prices, right? Like everyone for months and months and months have been like, oh, Blur is ruining the market. Incentivized bidding is very bad, right? And you can say one way or the other on this, but like, you know, I think there is merit to the idea that like there are some sellers who probably could never have sold before that were able to sell, like, you know, say 72 Bored Apes or something, right? that may have not been sellers except for there was liquidity for them to sell. So there was more supply in the market. I think this is a reasonable argument. But like, if you think that Blur has been ruining the market, right, then maybe this airdrop that I think truly like season 3 is, the incentives are like obviously not as much, right? And so there's such a huge supply is in this airdrop that like the incentivized bidding kind of goes away. Does this make a better environment for NFTs or a worse environment for NFTs, right? Like, I think what you may see is a lot of the, there's like this set of NFTs that is just being like tossed around like a hot potato between all the farmers. And like that set will like properly re-enter the market, right? Is there a bid to pick that up in like actual long spot positions or not? And like, then is it beneficial or detrimental that there isn't like this incentivized bid pool in the same way, right? So I think that's kind of one of the bigger open questions, is not just like price of Blur token, but like it's been very clear for months that Blur has a large impact on the NFT market overall, right? And so what is the impact of this change in incentivization structure for liquidity?
Yeah, it's going to be it's definitely going to be an interesting one, I think. So I think people have re-realized that there is a potential bounce in the NFT market. And I guess like people who don't like trading NFTs and don't appreciate their, well, do respect their liquidity, maybe want to play it as a proxy by buying Blur or even buying Apecoin. I think people use that as a proxy for NFTs sometimes as well. When we get the airdrop, and I know like most farmers or many farmers will be down net, but you know, most of them lost their money months ago now. And so the airdrop will still act as like some kind of a liquidity injection into the market. And yes, like it'll probably get sold off straight away. And you know, we don't know what that value really is, but where do you think that liquidity goes right now? If you get a Blur airdrop and people are able to sell it for some value of ETH?
Yeah, this is a good question, right? Like I think, it's interesting, right? We kind of saw this. So like we saw this play out a lot with meme airdrop. I think meme airdrop, in terms of liquidity it put into the NFT market, was probably equal to, if not larger than, liquidity that the Blur airdrop is going to provide. And we saw like there was a lot of liquidity that went into punks. I think, you know, one thing that the market seems to really be waking up to in NFTs is the importance of ERC20 airdrops, and not just ERC20 airdrops, but ERC20 airdrops that are market made by tier one market makers and listed on tier one exchanges, right? So you have to think like, what are the potential next projects with ERC20 tokens that could be listed on Binance or like kind of Coinbase, right? And this is like a pretty small subset. And we saw that, right? There's two projects that pumped really hard following meme when people just remembered how profitable that could be, right? And again, we talk about like, what are the big wins life, like in the history of NFTs, like, what are some of the big wins? And I think most of them are actually ERC20s, right? Apecoin is probably the biggest win in NFTs ever, right? I'll make this claim, you can debate it, but I think this is true, that the Apecoin airdrop is the biggest win because you airdropped this like $7 billion market capped coin that like didn't dilute the underlying price of the NFT. It was just like this crazy unlock moment for what NFTs could be. You have like Luxrare token and Blur token are two of the other big wins, and Memecoin token is another big win, right? And so people are just waking up to like ERC20s. Like one of my big views on NFTs is just like NFTs are actually kind of like the private markets of crypto, right? So like in traditional markets, you have like, and this is like actually solves a problem with crypto. So in crypto, right, you launch a token, you have like a multi $100 million, $1 billion market cap. And like oftentimes you're like a, you know, 10-week-old company. And it turns out it's really hard to justify like a hundreds million dollar market cap for a 10-week-old company. And this is why like most coins are like down only, right? But in traditional, and like the only ones that aren't are infrastructure and infrastructure for trading other infrastructure, right? But like, this is not how traditional markets work. In traditional markets, you actually have private markets before sort of a public offering, right? And so you have pre-seed, seed, growth stage, and then IPO, right? This is how like capital flows in traditional markets. Now, actually, if you look at Bored Apes, this is almost exactly the flow they took, except their pre-seed was the Bored Ape Mint originally. Their seed was the Mutant Ape Mint. Then they did a venture raise with a token warrant. And then instead of going IPO, they ICO'd with Apecoin, returned capital to all of those stakeholders via the coin. And similar to like in traditional markets, right? Like there is more liquidity in public markets than private markets, which is why it's almost always profitable to take a company public. Same thing here. Like there is just more liquidity, and there structurally always will be more liquidity in coin market than NFT market. So like the biggest goal of most NFTs is a multi-stage like ICO essentially, right? And so this is where you have like who is actually gearing up to do that and who has the resources to do that. And also like not all TGEs, token generation events are the same, right? Binance right now has such a huge percentage of like the mine share, the capital share, et cetera. Like if Memecoin wasn't listed on Binance, it would never have hit multi-billion dollar valuations. It's just not happening, right? And so who else could do that? And I think like people are looking at, you know, we saw that the collections that had the sympathy pump that was really strong to Memeland was Grapes and was Mochaverse, which are sort of both like Animoca adjacent companies, right? And I think that's a pretty like easy kind of left brainy, or you know, left curve thing of like, okay, we know that Binance is sort of like this like Asian kind of affiliated exchange. It's not a coincidence, I think, that the company run by Ray, who you know is based out of Asia, gets the listing. Who else has the ability to pull a listing like that, right? And you have to look at sort of two things. One is it could be large market capped kind of famous projects, right? People think Azuki, people think Pudgy Penguins, people think, you know, these could be on the horizon. The other one is like, okay, projects that are backed by someone like an Animoca, who like, you know, does Yacht have the ability to call like Binance and like bully them into a listing? Like probably, right? Yeah. Like, like there's a small list of people that can do that in crypto, and it's like Andreessen, Paradigm, like Animoca, like there's a couple of these people that have the ability to pull really big exchange listings like that. And then you got to look too at market makers, right? You have the same market maker that market made ApeCoin when it launched, market made Blur, right? Like not all market makers are the same. There's a couple of really good ones. And so who are they getting? And so that to me is the big like thing to be on the lookout for, is like who's going to play this ERC-20 token game right?
Yeah. So is there anything else on the horizon you're looking at that maybe has a similar playbook? I think we were in this period for a while when people were like, oh, ERC-20 airdrops are worthless. And now because tokens in general are just pumping, people are like, oh, I want an ERC-20 airdrop because it will probably pump. And so like the idea of like farming things and, you know, trying to play the next airdrop, I think is probably like a good use of time, especially people who don't have, I think for anyone who doesn't have like loads of capital to go out there and like spend, what I would be doing if it was me, I'd just be going out there farming every single token airdrop as much as I could. Cause it's like, it's a graft, like it's really hard to do, but it's basically free money. But yeah, is there anything else that you have like on your radar? Cause you know, you played the, a lot of people, including myself, were doubters of the whole Memeland thing. And I think they just executed it with the perfect timing. And as you said, like raise connections and getting it listed on Binance, et cetera. He definitely like pulled something out the sleeve that I think many people weren't expecting. But is there anything else similar to that you have your eye on at the moment?
I mean, I think it's like the most obvious thing that I see like not enough people talking about is just farming flooring protocol tokens, right? Like that's a token that is currently not listed on any exchanges. And so there's just obvious catalysts potentially in the future for it. And the cost to farm it is like relatively low. Cause so basically the way that you like farm Flooring Lab token is just like you stake LP'd pairs between fractionalized NFTs, like so they're micro tokens and like ETH. And then you can stake that and you earn yield in the native FLC token. And it's a function of how tight your spread is. So it's actually a function, the token you earn is a function of the exotic pair fee on Uniswap that you're earning as well. So it's just like an incentivized Uniswap position, and the like FLC rewards, I think in most cases will offset your like impermanent loss from being in a Uniswap position. That being said, like the tighter your range is, the more it's really like a directional trade that you like necessarily end up on the wrong side of, right? So if you have like a very, very tight range, this means that you'll buy infinite supply if it goes down slightly and sell infinite supply if it goes up slightly, right? And so if you are selling every time something, buying every time something goes down, selling every time something goes up, you could have just like end up on the wrong side of a dump. So like be careful, but in terms of risk reward, like, you know, you can figure out how to play this if you want, but this is just I like this token anyway, because it seems it's like it's early on, like this has no listings and still has like, I think a $200 million, maybe $300 million like FDV, right? So, you know, there is room to run, but, and like exchange listings are such an obvious catalyst, but also like the opportunity cost to farm this is much lower, right? Like, I don't think you, and it's frankly like much easier, for example, like this is much easier than farming Blur.
It's definitely takes a while to get your head around this one, I think, but
this is a very complicated one, and you can tell this is built by a nerd because the tokens are start with a Greek letter.
There you go. What's like an explain like I'm five for the audience on this one? I guess the Uniswap comparison was a good one.
No, but it's not a comparison. It is literally a Uniswap.
Yeah, there you go. Damn, that's pretty interesting. Okay, might have to mess with that. I've actually never even heard of it, so that's how I'm behind that.
So this is crazy to me that no one's heard of this. So Flooring Labs has like 10% lower TVL and like maybe 20% lower volume than Blur, but it's pretty comparable.
Interesting. Oh, that's cool. Definitely some alpha there. What about like, have you done any of the SocialFi tokens or anything like that? I know those have been pretty popular, but sort of fell off the cliff pretty hard after our episode.
Yeah, I mean, I played around a little bit, like on what was the
Frentech.
Yeah, so I have a Frentech account. You know,
well, you already forgot what it's called.
I was doing Frentech.
That's very damning.
Well, I was gonna say. So I was playing around with Frentech, like, and for me, I was just like, this is interesting. I want to play around with it, but I'm not investing like huge amounts of capital into it, right? So what I was doing, like, I do for my LP is a write up once a month, and so people in my Frentech shares, I would just post the write up, like with a little bit of, you know, confidential information redacted, but like, it was just kind of a cool way to get that out to other people, like versus doing a newsletter or something. So that was interesting to play around with. I think the challenge with like these is again, is this just this problem of like crypto products where like this is an interesting product, but like we've done this before, right? It's BitClout all over again, right? Like we keep doing this and like I've never met anyone who's like, oh, Frentech survives the airdrop, right? I just don't like it's just so obvious, right? And I think this is one of the things too, is like we went from a world where we were playing in games designed by Andreessen to a world where we're playing in games designed by Paradigm. And the Paradigm games are like incredibly more degen and incredibly more cutthroat, right? Like this is the difference between, you know, Art Gobblers and like Moonbirds, right? Moonbirds being the one that Andreessen backed, Art Gobblers being the Paradigm one, right? Where like Paradigm projects, like they are very good at tokenomics and like sending stuff, right? This is the difference between OpenSea and Blur, right? Yeah. And so like, if you look at like considering, you know, and don't get me wrong, like again, Paradigm is on that list of people who can just like list a coin if they want to, right? So this is one of the reasons that like their stuff does so well is like, you know, there will be liquidity on Frentech coin. Like there just has to be, right? And so, you know, you don't have to think that hard to farm it. It was like, this was the play like last cycle too. It was like anytime Andreessen backed a project, just like hold it. And you knew there was gonna be a token airdrop, right? That's like, you know, not necessarily a token airdrop, but you knew it was gonna go up, right? This was like the whole sort of Bored Ape thing was like, how did Bored Apes win so hard? Was like, they just were part of this game where like they were backed by the fund that also owned a large chunk in the major exchange. And like, that's a huge advantage, right?
Yeah, it's like who has the liquidity and who can force the liquidity is just like your head and shoulders.
You just call the CEO and be like, "Hey, I was your first check in your company, early time in your company. Like, I own 25% of it. List this company, right?"
Art Gobblers was a bad one, though. I mean, the NFTs when they came out were solid, but that one was maybe their biggest flop ever, I would have to say.
But it wasn't. No, but this is the thing, right?
Was it not?
So, but this is the thing: is like, what was the point of Art Gobblers? The point of Art Gobblers was just to pump volume onto Blur.
No, right. You're right. I forgot and about so, like, that. It was the secret handshake to Blur.
No, but this is the thing. Is like,
it was.
That was, so what was the day that Blur passed OpenSea in volume? Yeah. It was the day of the Art Gobblers mint, right?
Yeah, you're right.
There. And so this is the thing. Is like, this was actually, like, Blur would never, without Art Gobblers, Blur would never have been the market cap it was, right? And so this is actually a huge win. But this is why I'm saying, like, this is a much more cutthroat game.
Yeah,
right? No. Like, the game for Andreessen was, like, take OpenSea public. That was what they were trying to do. That was the end game, right? The game here is like, make sure Blur token is worth like a ton, right? And so that this is like a very different game that you're playing.
That's true. Now that you put it, for anyone who doesn't know, Art Gobblers was like some Paradigm-backed NFT that had some really complicated tokenomics stuff, launched at some high price, but it proved that Blur was like head and shoulders above OpenSea for trading NFTs. Like you could just see the transactions going off in real time super quickly, and there was a lot of advantageous spots by being on Blur rather than OpenSea when this launched, and so, the volume was insane. Like maybe you have a better recollection of it than I do, but it was an epic backdoor into forcing everyone onto Blur.
So yeah, so I mean, it's hard to think about this time, but Blur was really like not that popular platform at this time, and so like we were market making, and they dropped it on Halloween, right? Yeah. At like the night of Halloween, and so we were market making OpenSea to Blur, and there was a 20% spread for like 2 hours, right? Which is bananas, right?
Yeah,
like this is one of those opportunities, right? Like in traditional markets, you wouldn't have a 20% spread. You wouldn't have a 2% spread. You wouldn't have a 0.02% spread.
Not with volume, you sure as hell wouldn't. Right? There was like, volume going off like crazy. Yeah.
Oh my God. The volume was insane. It was like it was crazy. And it just ran up and then they had a token. And like again, you're right. It was complicated, but if you followed it, it was like this is designed to go to zero, but it will pump first.
Did it pump? I kind of stopped following it after the first couple days.
Art Gobblers like, went to like 25 ETH.
I know. I think I sold mine at 15. I was like, I'm just done calling it here. That's fucking sick. And then, yeah. I mean, yeah, wow. I mean, they definitely did the job then. They sacrificed Justin Roiland, and I think his life has only been downhill since. And so
they sold the top of Justin Roiland.
They crushed Justin Roiland and his project. And that was that. Now Blur is what it is today because of that on the backs of those dollars.
And Ovi gets to sit here with a lot of ETH instead of some JPEGs that have gone down. It's all thanks to Justin Roiland.
Yeah, it's funny. A butterfly flaps his wings in some weird Rick and Morty world, and there we are.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So in the last, I guess, year or year and a half since you've had this fund, what have been some of the biggest mistakes that you think you've made? And like, have you dealt with it, or have you bounced back from them?
Or just ever? Doesn't even have to be the last
true time. Yeah,
I love
true
hearing general about question losses and how they bounce back and shared so trauma for the audience.
I have a couple of answers here, right? So like the biggest loss I guess I've ever taken in NFT trading, for example, was this like rug called Fatalis. It was like early on, they were like 0.5 ETH or something. And I think I lost like 2.5 ETH. And like this is not like the biggest money loss I've ever made. But the thing is, like, you have to understand, Bored Apes were like 2 ETH at the time. And so the opportunity cost of like that ETH is so obscenely high that it just feels really bad, right? From the fund perspective, I'd say like one of the things that I've been trending over time with, right? And like this is something that I'll be very open about, right? Like I run an NFT fund. This concept has existed for like a year, right? Like it's not like you can go talk to the like the famous historic NFT fund manager from like the 1800s, right? There's no writings on this. There's no textbook. There's no nothing, right? I don't know how to run an NFT fund. You don't know how to run an NFT fund. Nobody does, right? Like I'm learning along the way. We're learning stuff. We're in the arena trying things. And like one of the, I guess, early concepts that I had that was kind of wrong was when I was trading with like a personal account, right? Before I had a fund, a lot of flips were like these like 0.1 to 0.2 ETH NFT like runs. And it just turns out like that's really not easy to scale, right? And the reason, one of the reasons that you can get like these 2x, 3x multiples is like, if you have, you know, for that to be meaningful to a fund in like several millions of dollars range, like you need to be buying and selling hundreds. And even just like the mind share of attention that it takes isn't really worth it, because the price volatility of the more expensive assets you hold just like assumes the value there. And like, I have lost a lot more money on plays of like very long tail small cap stuff that I've lost on like interesting plays with the higher cap or mid tier things. Like I think it's much easier for a collection to go from, you know, 1 or 2 ETH to 6 to 10 ETH than it is to go from like 0.1 ETH to 1 ETH. Like that, I guess that was one learning. Now this may change in the market, but that also kind of leads to another conclusion, which is just like concentration of bets, right? Like I think one thing that is also important is it's really easy to like be in the mindset of I should diversify, et cetera, et cetera. You know, diversification in general is like pretty good. The truth of the matter is like, if you look at a market and you're like, there is like two good plays total in this market, you should just do those two plays. Don't look for the third, right? Because the truth of the matter is like, I'm guilty of this. And I think a lot of my friends that I talk to in the space are guilty of this. Is like, oh, like, I should have, you know, 10, like coming in and be like, I want 10 bets in the NFT space and like picking, and then like 5 through 10 aren't good bets. And you kind of know that going in, but they are the 5 through 10th best bets. This space is so small and so many of the operators in this space are terrible. And so much of like what goes on is like stupid that you really should be like very, very conservative and like make certain bets. And then when you make those bets, make them with conviction, go at size, like just go with them. Cause like, it's always the small bets that seem to lose the most. And that's really frustrating because you do the math and you're like, okay, I made like these 5 or 6, like kind of YOLO, whatever plays, and it actually added up to being the significant amount of money where now like I had this great win and it's returned some amount and like it just offset the losses. It didn't like actually be a win. And that's like a really frustrating thing to kind of like grapple with. Right. And I think the other thing too is like, you know, just how do you think about like another thing that, and this is sort of in a similar vein, right? One of the big opportunity costs too is like we had a big meme land position, be like more than one super crew, right? And I was like, okay, you know, we entered that like 4.5, 5 ETH, right? For captains went all the way down to like 3.5 ETH, and I was like, oh, like I don't know, I should have just doubled down and picked up more captains, right? And this was me being like, ah, I already have this big bet. Like, but like, if I liked it at 5.5 ETH, I should have loved it at 3.5 ETH, right? And I did. And like, this was just like, all the math had not changed at all, other than like people were just capitulating, right? And so this is like, the mistake was not like, A, reserving some more dry powder, but B, like thinking, oh, I'm already so pot committed to this play, I shouldn't buy the dip on it further. Whereas like the right answer was at that time, you know, there wasn't that much else interesting going on. And like, I think about, oh, the cash that I had then that was just sitting, like earning the Fed funds rate, like should have just been in that trade.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, as a hindsight trade though, a little bit.
I mean, all of it is, right?
Yeah, of course. But no, I agree with a lot, the like taking these small positions on these like lottery plays that are nearly like 100% loss rate at you know, a 99% hit rate on that loss is definitely something people fall into and do. Like, they're addicted to like trying to find the next big thing rather than, you know, going with these winners in such a nascent space that they still can have extreme upside, even if they're the ones that already won. So yeah, that's an interesting way to play it there. Do you play any NFTs on any other chains or anything, or is it just all Ethereum based stuff?
I have a play on Bodagos, which is on Solana. So I kind of like, you know, I think like I look at Solana, I've been looking for a play on Bitcoin ordinals. I'm not sure what it's going to be yet. Like, to me, you know, there's a couple of things that are challenging about other chains. One is just the amount of money available to buy your bags, right? Mm-hmm. I think this has changed a lot actually with the change in price of Solana, but like when Solana was at a $10 billion market cap for the whole chain, it's like, how hard can NFTs run if there's literally only $10 billion in the world that could buy your bags, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas like you look at ETH and there's $200 billion in the world that can buy your bags, like the upside is like clearly higher, right? I think this is like kind of, but like, you know, that's a bull thesis on like Bitcoin ordinals, right? Because Bitcoin, there's way more money to buy your bags than there is on ETH even, right? The challenge with Bitcoin ordinals is like, you know, people always think about, oh, like we're so early. Like, you know, if you look at early Ethereum NFTs, like 99% of them are completely worthless, right? People are like, oh, well, if only I was there for punks, if only I was there. Look, I'll tell you this. When I started trading crypto, I bought Coinye coin instead of buying Doge, right? And if you remember like back in the day, this was like not obvious, right? And you probably haven't, most people listening to this probably don't know what Coinye coin is. You've ever seen the South Park episode where Kanye is a gay fish? They took the image of Kanye as a gay fish and put it on a coin. And this one launched around the same time as Doge and was like much bigger, right? But Coinye like sued them and it got taken down. And so it's nothing now, right? But like, even if you were trading at that time when Doge first came out, you like wouldn't necessarily have bought Doge, right? And this is like, you know, same with punks, like CryptoKitties, like there was like these dinosaurs that laid eggs. There was like all these NFTs in 2017, 16, like you might, maybe you got punks, right? But like, there's like people underestimate the amount of stuff that is truly just worthless. And it's actually like higher than you think because all these people rush to just be the first one to get something out. So there's a narrative of being first and no one ever builds those projects because they're like, ah, we're first. Like this person commenting first on a post on like Twitter is never to comment something insightful, right? Like, and so maybe one of them will end up as this historical artifact, but like, this to me is the Bitcoin ordinal space today is like, there's all these people being like first, and something will stick. Something may even stick from this era, but until it's obvious to me, which is the one that's sticking, it's like, I don't know, right? So I'm looking for the play, we'll see. I think Solana has become more interesting. You know, I think Polygon is also like another thing that I'm looking at. It's interesting. Maybe we'll see an Arbitrum thing. I don't know, but like, I think one of the other like sides of this too is like NFTs are actually great for chains. So one of the other conversations that I've had a lot, especially like KBW or Korea Blockchain Week and Token 2049, is like every L1 that launches really wants an NFT ecosystem. Every L2 really wants an NFT ecosystem because it's one of the best use cases. We're like, okay, we have a chain that like is infrastructure and like we need people to do things. And NFTs, in terms of even if you look at what they are to Ethereum, is actually like a pretty meaningful percentage of all the like actually doing things that are not trading or infrastructure for trading, right? Like NFTs.
Yeah, yeah.
100%. Brings liquidity volume, brings like different players than would normally be on the chain, and a lot of media and a lot of promotion to the chain as well. That's you know, a very hard thing to get organically. So if you can find an NFT on the chain, it definitely blows it up. I feel like Treasure DAO kind of did that for a minute with Arbitrum. Solana, I don't know what one did that there. What was their popular NFTs? Oh, I guess it was, they moved to ETH, didn't it?
Yeah, Utes. now it's Mad Lads, Clinosaurs.
Yeah. And Ordinals, I honestly can't think of a popular Ordinal.
There's like, so, you know, you've got like Bitcoin frogs on Ordinals. Bitcoin it's kind of like people claim that that's their thing. Oh,
some Wizards or some shit?
Taproot Wizards. You've got Ordinal Maxi Biz. Do you just like look at these projects? I don't know, like maybe, right?
Yeah, I mean, never know. I don't want to say never because I think I poo-pooed Bored Apes enough on the way since the mint on. So I don't really think I'm a good judge here. I think that's what Spencer's saying too. It's impossible to judge a project off the bat. You don't know what's going to be popular and what's not going to be popular, which is probably why those lottery ticket plays are nearly impossible to hit. Stay away from those.
Or just ape them. Be a DJ.
Or just ape them. I don't know.
This is wrecked. Yeah. This is wrecked radio. This is not like make money radio.
Oh man, when you put it like that, maybe flip the advice around. Oh man, that's true. what else do we got on the docket today before we close it up here? I mean, do you guys, what about like one of one art? I mean, we've got an artist on the show, OSF here. Does your fund do any of that? What's a fun perspective on one of one art, generative art? I think that's the last, you know, NFT area that we haven't discussed yet that I'd like to touch.
So like, here's my view on this. It's like, I think NFT art will have a place. It's like, it's so obvious. It's correct. I think there's a few takes I have on NFT art right now. So we don't trade a lot of NFT art in the fund. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One of which is just the liquidity around NFT art is not the same as around the rest of NFT market. And it's really hard to think about price, especially for one of ones. And so you see a lot of funds that will buy a lot of art and buy a lot of one of ones and then just hold them at cost on their books, right? Because, oh, it's a one of one, we can't reprice it. We mark to market our books so our LPs know how we're doing. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, like, I don't love holding one of ones because it's like, I don't know how to mark this to market, right? We'll have some rare PFP collections, but those you can usually do okay. There's historic multiples on floor price of some of these. Like, there's some senses you can get. And you even see this with something like the 3AC portfolio, right? Where the liquidators, when they're liquidating the 3AC portfolio, have to sell the Fidenzas like several at a time because the 3AC had like 20 Fidenzas, right?
Yeah.
There's like one Fidenza trade a month, two Fidenza trades a month, right? Liquidating 20 Fidenzas like might take 10 months, right? And I don't love being in a position that like doesn't have that kind of liquidity because how do you think about its value, right? The other thing that I think about the art market is, to me, way too high a percent of the entire NFT art market is literally just like five art blocks, right? And so the NFT art that I do like is I like things, people who are minting on their own contracts, people who are like, and this is not like a knock at art blocks. Art blocks is great, but the art market can't be healthy with like just art blocks being all of the top projects. And like, if you look from an art perspective too, I think Fidenza is just like too much significantly better looking than like most of the other generative art space, mm-hmm. right? So I do really like one of one art. I think it's cool. You know, we have some art in our portfolio, but I would say like, it just doesn't fit the mold of some of this other stuff. And also like for us, you know, again, when it comes to like farming liquidity pools, like it's just not the right asset to be doing a lot of the other infrastructure stuff with. I love Fidenzas though. I think this is, you know, an easy play, but like, would I rather have a punk or a Fidenza? It just feels to me like I can do a lot more stuff in NFTFi with a punk than with a Fidenza. And yeah. I think that like they're probably pretty similar assets in that like if you just want like the simplest like NFT exposure, you buy a punk or a Fidenza, and like that's just like probably the right answer, right? Like if you just want to like buy something and forget about it. The other thing too is like, so like I have a lot of art. Like our walls are full of art in our house. Like, and this is maybe me being silly and like not NFT maxi. It's just like I think traditional art is like more interesting because I get to look at it all the time versus like. Like I just would rather buy a piece of physical art to hang on my wall than a piece of digital art. Whereas I think like the value prop of a lot of other NFTs is actually like pseudo ownership or exposure to like a proxy bet on the success of a company is much more what I'm interested in than a proxy bet on like an artist. So I think we saw this with like, you know, the biggest example of this too is like Fawocious, right? Where like if you were in the market a few months ago, a few years ago, right? Fawocious was easily one of the, like the top emerging NFT artists. Mm-hmm. And look how quickly that reputation fell off after something he did in his personal life, right? And, you know, when you think about what do you want to be risk exposed to, I would rather be risk exposed to the execution of a company than risk exposed to the reputation of an individual, right? And again, this is like for example, what happens to the NFT market? And I'm not saying this would happen or anything, but, and I really actually don't think this is going to happen, but like, let's say there was some sort of really bad scandal involving Snowfro, right? Founder of mm-hmm. Artblox. Like, yeah. How does that impact the price of like the entire NFT market and art market? And I think very significantly, right? And I don't love exposure to like one person's personal behavior in the way that I think the whole NFT art market does. So that's like my little rant about NFT art. Love NFT art, love supporting artists, but it's just not the type of asset that my fund trades.
Yeah, that's fair.
Not to mention it's a lot less liquid as well, I guess, compared to the other stuff as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that this display issue you mentioned as well for this art. I mean, like I bought a token frame, a Black Dove. Both of them don't have any NFTs on them because it was just such a poor experience trying to get it up. I know I'll probably get a DM right now from both those companies to try to help me. But they're literally both just blank screens in my basement right now. They're just permanently on black. I just can't deal with it. So I'm just like, fuck it.
I own like, you know, millions of dollars of NFTs. And yeah. Have no digital frames in my house. Like it's just not the way that.
And like, I tried, and then it's like your Wi-Fi sucks. Like and then the fucking thing's moving and it's choppy, and then you have to like take it off the wall and it's 50 pounds and to reset it. I don't know. A lot of barriers to entry here to get this thing on the wall.
This is the thing too, is like, I think that like people always, like, this is the whole thing with like 3D environments and stuff. People always think the metaverse is going to be like a digital version of the thing we already do, right? And I just don't think it will be. Like, I think that digital screens will never be better consumption of art than like actual art, like physical paintings and stuff, right? And so, but that's not a bear sentiment. It's just like, where else do we experience art on the internet in already digital settings, right? Like, this is why PFPs make a lot of sense to me, because, you know, whereas I don't display digital art in my house, I do display like my PFP on Twitter. And this is like a meaningful like experience. Like, Twitter is the metaverse, which I experience the most, right? Like, do I need a virtual meeting platform where like we're 3D avatars walking around a metaverse? No, like this, what we're doing right now, like Wrecked Radio, is like very much the metaverse. Like, it's here, we're doing this. We're in three different cities, like halfway across the world from each other, mm-hmm. talking to people all over the world, right? Who knows? Maybe someone's even in space listening to us right now. Like, this is the metaverse. We're here. We've done it. Like, this is what it looks like, right? And so, you know, I'll rock my Wrecked guy on my hoodie. I'll, you know, have some Zade art that's a print on the wall, not a digital, right? But like, I don't know. Like, I just don't get it, right? Maybe I'm a boomer or whatever, but like, the art thesis for NFTs isn't as strong to me as some of the other stuff until I find a way to interact with art that's in my wallet in a more meaningful way.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Yeah, it's nice of you to rock that Wreck Guy swag. I hear one of the Wreck Guy founders or partners just poo-pooed your Mutant Ape swag that you gave him and tossed it in the trash.
Oh yeah, this story.
We'll give that, and then we'll give the closing questions.
Okay, so this is an important story. As a matter of fact, so you may be wondering, why is Mando not here, right? And Mando likely is not here because, so for those of you who know, I think it was like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, at the Rug Radio event in NFT NYC, talking to Mando. Mando, does he dress well? No, I would say no. But I talked to him and he said, you know, like, I'd like you to kit me out. I said, no problem, I got you. And I learned that neither Mando nor Ovi had ever gotten, despite owning like being one of the largest holders of Bored Apes at the time, had ever gotten any Bored Ape or Mutant Ape merch. I was like, well, we have to fix this. So for their panel at the Rug Radio event, I brought and kitted out Mando head to toe in Mutant Ape merch. We're talking Mutant Ape hoodie, talking Mutant Ape, you know, sweatpants, talking a Mutant Ape hat, the whole nine yards. Got him everything. He looked like he was about to shit post and shave the side of his head and be like, no cap, for real, or whatever. But then, you know, this kind gift from me, what did he do? He left it at the hotel and was like, come pick it up. I don't want it. And this was very insulting to me. So, you know, rather than face me as a man on this call right now, Mando is off doing whatever he's doing.
Yeah, whatever the hell.
You know, without having left my gift to him in another country.
That's sad. But I mean, that's classic Mando, from what I understand.
Rug.
Anyway, let's wrap it up. And then you got to stick around for the Roll Bit Spins. Some people are going to win some NFTs, and maybe they're going to sell them to your fund. Who the hell knows? But let's go with.